which is something that occurs in cardiovascular disease. Healthy fats, you all know these things. Omega-3s, avoid refined oils, avoid overheating them. Flaxseed, walnuts, greens, all are rich in omega-3s and are healthy fats. Vegetarian nutrition, actually, that is the next topic. So I'm going to go fairly quickly through these. You have some summary of some of this on your handout. And you know a lot of this, I hope. But B12, how many people know their B12 level or have had it done within the last 2 years? Okay, not enough of you. You know, even if you're eating non-veg, after 55, there's still like 20% of people, even in the general population, who are low in B12. And if you were ever low in B12 in your life and you're not taking it every day, at least 500 micrograms, you're probably low again. And it, seriously, if you're starting to feel some tingling or numbness, or you feel like your balance isn't as good, or your memory's not as good, or you feel at all depressed, these are all things that can be B12. I've seen a lot of it. I see somebody came to me with, they said, I think I have arthritis in my toes. Well, they didn't. They just couldn't feel their toes, so they felt stiff to them. This was B12 deficiency, really severely. A lady came to me, she said she thought she was getting MS like her brother. No, she had B12 deficiency, fortunately, and it reversed within about 6 to 12 months after starting supplements. B12 should be over 300, some even say over 550. Don't accept if your doctor says, oh, it's 200, that's like the normal, the lab says, that you're still at risk. If it's less than 200, you have twice the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Vegetarian, as I mentioned, 1,000 micrograms per day if you're low in it. Folic acid also is involved in keeping the brain healthy. This was an example of folic acid deficiency. Look at that brain on the right. It's pretty atrophied. Don't get low in folic acid. Even if you eat greens, you might end up getting low in it. Zinc, also very important for immunity, for healing, for the skin, for the hair, for nerves, for smell and taste. Look, if you look at a cut or you get a little scrape, and about 10 days later it's still there, maybe it's got a scab, but it just doesn't seem to be going away, take some zinc. You may find probably within 1 to 2 days it's completely healed. It can be that quick. And zinc is really, really important. Best way to check zinc level, it's found, is through a white blood cell test. And that's a nutritional test which actually looks at your own immune cells. And if you add a certain nutrient, will those immune cells work better or not? It's called a functional test in nutrition. And this is the kind of the coming, up-and-coming approach to testing nutrition rather than just taking the norms of the population and say that that's good enough for everybody. Magnesium, if you get Charlie horses or you get skip beats in your heart, you probably need magnesium, and it's most of the population today is low in magnesium. It also helps to lower the risk of arrhythmias and can help to lower blood pressure. It's also important in metabolism and detoxification. Calcium, most ovo-lacto or lacto-vegetarians do not have to worry about calcium. You're getting plenty of it, just perhaps more magnesium. Iron, especially females, but even males on a total vegetarian diet, especially as they get older, may be low in iron. Gluten intolerant people, this is a huge epidemic in this country of gluten intolerance. If you feel chronically fatigued or some digestive problems or a dull, foggy brain or joint aches, just about anything can be a manifestation of gluten, not only like by heredity, but by just sensitivity. And there are very sensitive tests now that can show that. So iron can affect all of these things. Add lemon to your food, you'll increase your absorption of it. Also, amla berries, great help in absorbing minerals, including iron. Vitamin D, that's the latest and greatest all cure-all for modern medicine. Vitamin D is something that most people in this community are low in. And testing them, unless you do a lot of gardening all summer or live on the beach, you're probably borderline to low. It's a good idea to test your level. You can do it relatively inexpensively by a kit you can get from ZRT Labs, or if you have health insurance, you can probably get it paid for by them. Protein, I won't go into it in general, but if you're eating rice, dal, vegetables, lassi, and tofu, you're probably deficient in amino acids. I no longer, when I see that on somebody's form as their diet day after day, I no longer have to do an amino acid profile because I already know that they're going to be low. And it just isn't enough protein. And tofu and soy has enzyme inhibitors that actually inhibit the breakdown of protein. So it can act against you. Fermented soy does not have that same problem. But many people avoid that for various reasons. So get enough protein, paneer every day. If you have the Agni for it, you know, any of the soft cheeses at lunchtime, and, you know, more nuts and seeds. But pretty much without dairy, it's very hard to get enough protein unless you supplement it in some way for those vegans in the audience. Okay, hormone balance. Go quickly through this. Everyone knows hormone is. It's actually a substance produced by a tissue, goes into the bloodstream, and goes somewhere else in the body where it has its effect. That's the definition of a hormone. And we have here a special hormone system we're going to address today, which is usually the one we're most interested in, which is the one that gives us our maleness and femaleness, and that is the steroid hormone family. And this family and regulation of it involves the adrenal glands, which sit atop the kidneys, the brain, and also the gonads, which are not in this picture. Steroid hormone family involves and is involved in stress response, our reproductive hormones, repair and recovery, regulating blood sugar, fluid balance, and strength and vitality. Before I put this slide up, I should have asked you the question, what is the source of our steroid hormones? Could it be big, bad cholesterol? Source of something so precious to us as our hormonal system? Yes, cholesterol. So maybe when you lower cholesterol too much, maybe that's not so good. On the other hand, too much cholesterol is like an ama, and just the right amount and the proper transformation of it into hormones, I think, is part and parcel of the OGIS in the system. So cholesterol, you see here, gets made into another molecule called pregnenolone, which is sort of a grandmother hormone that can go to two different streams. And you'll see on the left, you see the DHEA. That goes into our male and female hormones. So that side is the repair, rejuvenate, and reproduce. Okay, all the R's, repair, rejuvenate, reproduce. That's that side. The other side goes to progesterone, which curiously gets turned into cortisol. So all those women who take progesterone because they're low in progesterone, why might they be low in progesterone? Because their body's using it to make cortisol. So a lot of hormonal issues before and after menopause, for example, for women, actually have to do with the adrenals. You ever heard of a woman who didn't get pregnant because she was under a lot of stress? And gynecologists often tell the story that when women finally give up, or a couple gives up, they decide to adopt, they get pregnant. It happens all the time because they finally relax. They give up. They quit being so stressed out about not getting pregnant. So the woman, and probably the man, they make more hormones. They have less cortisol to make, so they make more of their own hormones. So their reproductive cycle is healthier. So there's kind of a balance between repair on the left of DHEA and breakdown, which is cortisol. Now, we need cortisol to deal with stress, but we don't want too much of it or it causes things to break down. We stay up too late, we skip our meals, we worry, we exercise too much, like run marathons, and we actually create a lot of excess cortisol. And that can lead to overweight, diabetes, heart disease, immune suppression, cancer, memory, mood, brain problems, muscle, bone, and what we women care most about is collagen loss. So what can we do to fight collagen loss and help our hormones? Well, number one, ashwagandha is a wonderful antidote. It helps to modulate cortisol. If we have too little, it helps the body, or too little hormone, it helps the body make more, and too much, it'll help it go down. And ashwagandha is MA-686, and Marshi Ayurveda product. Licorice root helps to increase cortisol if you're low in it, which can happen if you're exhausted from too much stress for too long. And I find this such a beautiful example of the wisdom of Ayurveda is that the Amar Kalash Ambrosia tablet, which was designed by the Vaidyas to complement the nectar, which is a very traditional formula more for the body, they wanted to create something more for the mind and nervous system. And they created Amrit Kalash Ambrosia tablet. And do you know what the two main ingredients in ambrosia are? Licorice and ashwagandha. So they support the adrenal system. Ambrosia supports the adrenal system. Romania, Chinese herb. Holy basil, gotu kola, brahmi, which are found in worry-free. Another great rejuvenator of the adrenal system. Worry-free was shown to reduce cortisol levels in stressed, anxious people. At a dose, by the way, of 2 twice a day. I want to say, if you ever try an herb and it sounds like just the right thing for you, or a product, a Mabi product, but you don't seem to get enough effect, generally you can take a double dose safely. And sometimes you have to, as you've probably noticed, many of the Ayurvedic physicians and Vaidyas will give higher doses for specific problems. I wanted to show this slide. This was a 70-year-old engineer who had his own business and had retired, but he took on a special project, which he committed to do in 6 months. And he felt that he would do that comfortably. Well, they called him up after a few weeks and said, "Can you do it in 3? And he kind of gulped, and being the man he was, he said yes. And after about 3 months, he just barely finished the project. He could barely think. He couldn't sleep. He was anxious and depressed, which he had never been in his whole life. You know, engineers are usually pitta kapha. They're not vata people. They have to deal with all that patient work, all those details. Well, this is what his profile looked like. The red line, the two black lines, dotted lines, are where your cortisol is supposed to be. It's higher in the morning and drops during the day, but it's supposed to be up in this range so that you have energy to deal with the day. Well, his was down where the red line is. He basically had burned out his adrenal system, and he just didn't have enough to run his mind and nervous system properly. This is after about 6 months on Maharshi Ayurveda products. He said Mind Plus, he was addicted to. Of course, he wasn't when he didn't need it anymore. He didn't need it. but he said the products, Worry-Free and Mind Plus, he just felt, and this was not a meditator either. He was not, used to Mapi products. He didn't know much about Ayurveda. But he just felt a strong affinity to drink and take a lot of these herbs. And it made a huge difference for him right away and accumulatively corrected the problem. So here's some Maharshi Ayurveda stress protectors: stress-free mind, youthful mind, mind plus syrup, worry-free, the 686, and ambrosia tablet. Now, I think most of the women in this community are hopefully no longer using hormone creams, but if you're using a cream, it can be very difficult to regulate it. And this is these are the values of hormone that I tested on somebody that was using hormone creams. She had been using them about 2 years, and her doctor had been monitoring the blood level. This was a saliva test, which can give more information about what's building up in the body and in the tissues. And she, when she first started the hormone, she felt much better, and she felt great. But after about a year to 2 years, she started to deteriorate, and she couldn't understand why. And I suggested it might be the hormones. And here we found that her estrogen and progesterone levels were off the chart, way too high. When we get too much in the body starts shutting down its receptors, like insulin resistance. As the body starts shutting down its receptors to insulin, it says there's too much of this. It's too much. We don't want it. We don't want it in the cells. So she had an overdose that actually resulted in signs of severe hormone deficiency. And not only that, she couldn't sleep at night, even though she had recently taken a sabbatical. And this was why. Remember those two black dotted lines of where the cortisol should be? Well, her blue line values are up in the sky, basically. She had a very elevated cortisol. And that's because, if you remember from that chart, progesterone can be made into cortisol. Yeah. So she was making cortisol, and that's why she couldn't sleep, because she was stressed out even though she wasn't stressed out. Okay. Detoxification. I won't go too much into this, but it's very fascinating how our body gets rid of toxins. There are two stages in the liver, and we take any fat-soluble toxins, which cannot go out in the kidneys, because remember, you know, urine is water. It's water-soluble. So we have to make things water-soluble to get them out through the kidneys. So the body has a way of doing that, and it has two steps to it. First, it takes that fat-soluble toxin and puts it through something called the P450 system, which makes those fat-soluble toxins actually more toxic, more reactive. And then the second stage is that it puts something on that very reactive molecule. It's reactive, so now it'll accept something and bind to it. So then it has about five or six different things it can put on, from sulfur groups to glutathione to amino acids. So you can bind something on, and then it's water soluble and it can go out of the body. But those of you who are really sensitive to toxins, you may have a deficiency in the second step, which means you may be making that very reactive first step end product, right? But you may not have enough of these binders. And so when you get exposed to a toxin, your body can make it more toxic. And that may be a hot liver. You may have a hot liver because things are irritated in there. Then you really need to beef up your detox. And the main way to do that is, to support that, is to make sure you have certain nutrients. That's why protein is so important. In fact, I talked to the physician who was the head of the lab at one of these labs where I was doing all these amino acid profiles on people. And I called him up one time and said I wanted to go over several of the profiles. And he said, "Well, hi, Dr. Lonsdorf. What do you got, a lot of vegetarians there?" I said, "Well, actually, yes." And he says, "Well, this is what I see everywhere I go all over the world." He said, "If they don't get enough protein, then these amino acid levels are really low." And then he said, "Are they really sensitive to toxins?" I said, "Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely." And he says, "Well, this is why." So here we see on the step two, under required nutrients, it lists amino acids. And amino acids, cysteine particularly, and glycine and glutamine are necessary to make this number one detoxifying substance called glutathione in our bodies. So we have to have those amino acids available. And also these sulfur ones. So the garlic, you know, we now have leeks, which are okay for yogis. So eat your leeks. You get the good sulfur groups. You need those also. Cruciferous vegetables also are fantastic. They help this step number two. Cruciferous vegetables are the cabbage family, which includes broccoli and Brussels sprouts and even kale. Turmeric, turns out, helps both stages. It helps the first step and the second step. So you can't go wrong with turmeric. It's going to support the whole process of detoxification. It's antioxidant and inflammatory, reduces amyloid plaques in the brain by 50%. Remember that you get those worse if they've got sugar in your brain. Alzheimer's disease is only 1% incidence in Indian villagers. It's like cardiac disease is virtually non-existent in tribal peoples. It also helps lower blood sugar and helps with the fat metabolism. Cook it in with your food. That's what we're taught in Ayurveda. It won't create any side effects that way. Otherwise, it may be too heating for the liver. And it's also found, again, in Brussels sprouts and cabbage and turnips. We could go into more, but we will pass on to coriander. Coriander also helps the liver detoxify. Coriander is very helpful. It's also diuretic, so it flushes toxins out through the kidneys. And you know that cilantro leaves help to get rid of mercury and perhaps other heavy metals from the kidneys. So this is excellent to take if you're detoxifying. Now, interestingly, taking antioxidants, remember there's been so much research for 10, 15 years on taking antioxidants, vitamin C, vitamin E, beta carotene, study after study after study after study. Well, that research has pretty much discovered one thing. Do you know what that is? Taking those antioxidant pills don't really make a difference. Or sometimes they make a negative difference. But all in all, they're not doing what we hoped they would do. You know, people have higher levels of vitamin E in their blood from food, so the hypothesis was, well, then if we give people vitamin E, they're going to have that lower risk of heart disease or cancer that those people who have it from their food will have. Well, that's not what they're finding. Taking these isolated nutrients in high amounts is not helping the health. Now, the latest line of research on antioxidants is what will induce and help the body's own antioxidant system to work better. And it turns out that Amr Kalash, which we know is not isolated high dose, it's just natural food, has antioxidants in it, but it also enhances the body's own antioxidant enzymes. In fact, superoxide dismutase, which is a really important one, in the body antioxidant system, it basically doubles its effectiveness. And we know it's 1,000 times more powerful than vitamin C or E. And it's that where that power of holism, the power of the effect, synergistic effect of the whole plant and all the parts of the plants and all the intelligence with the mixture and the carrier and all of that. The wisdom of Ayurvedic herbology. So, detox. So, in the spring, here's something that you can use. I would recommend, I told you about pesticides. So, what you have to do to help your body with pesticides is to have that good diet, good, you know, quality, enough protein. And I would suggest you can take this detox tea with coriander seeds, 2 Genitrac tablets. That has guduchi in it. Guduchi is known in Ayurveda for removing both internally generated toxins and external toxins. Marshmallow root to kind of lubricate, so these irritating, pitta aggravating toxins are made more soft and smooth. Fennel, which would be cooling for the summer. You take this between May and October, I would recommend, when pesticides tend to get sprayed in the air around here. A rosebud just to keep you pitta balanced and in a good mood all summer long. And if you really have high pitta, add a little bit of Indian sarsaparilla. That's very cooling and keeps the liver from getting overheated. We also have, of course, panchakarma, as an ideal purification, which keeps the shrotas clean, shrota shuddhi, purity of the gaps and channels. And of course, it also reduces toxins directly, as this study by Dr. Heron and Fagan showed, that Maharshi rejuvenation treatment reduces toxins. PCBs were 46% lower after Panchakarma, and this pesticide beta-HCH was 58% lower. This was after 5 days of Panchakarma, preceded by the ghee and castor oil. Also doing the ghee and castor oil routine, which is the Ayurvedic preparation for this Panchakarma or systematic cleansing routine of Ayurveda, that alone will help to solubilize fat-soluble pesticides and toxins and help get them out of the body. So even if you can't afford to do Panchakarma, you can do a home version and you can do your tea and you can have good nutrition. Also, I wanted to mention, which I don't have here, the Elimtox O. I found that works well. Somebody came up to me actually one day at the Raj and said, you know, hey, I think I need a MRI. Can you write me a prescription? Of course, I need a little more evaluation for that. But I did say to him, look, what's the problem? He said, well, I've got this aching here. And I said, well, you know, just in the last week or so? And he said, yes. I said, well, you know what? It's probably the pesticides. Just take a Elimtox O 2 times a day and drink a lot of water. And if it doesn't go away, come see me. He didn't come see me. I assume it went away. It's a common problem. If you feel aching in your, or you feel an irritated bladder, or you feel kind of funny, or you, you know, those are common symptoms, or you feel an aching on your right side where your liver is, you know, your body's working to detoxify, but you got to help it. You got to help it to be most effective. So also, while you're detoxifying the chemicals, you're also reducing the oxidation of your fat. So you're helping your heart health. Okay, we're getting near the end here. Just a few points here. Who's this little guy? Borrelia burgdorferi. That's his name. That's a big name for a little bug. See how little he is. That's the palm of somebody's hand. You see, just a little dot. This is the nymph form of the tick that conveys Lyme disease. See how tiny it is? The nymph form is most common in the spring. It can be any time, but more common in the spring, and is the one most likely to transmit the bacteria to you, to the human. So it's really a difficult challenge to, you know, stay on top of this, because if you have this bug somewhere on you, you just often never find it. You'll never see it. It's just too small. Get in your hair or somewhere in your back, and you just won't see it. So you have to have a high index of suspicion, and I'm bringing up Lyme because when I came here in 2000, Lyme was very common in Maryland, where I came from. But fortunately, I called the public health department in Iowa, and they said that we have only very rare cases of it. I kind of breathed a sigh of relief. But unfortunately, 11 years has passed, and that bacteria has found its way into Iowa big time. And Lyme is becoming very common around here. And it's really, really unfortunate if you like walking on grassy trails or through the woods or particularly tall grass. I have to advise you not to do that. You know, walk on the concrete. Look, it's not Ayurvedic, but unless you want to spray DEET all over you, I don't know how to effectively tell you how to avoid this disease. And it is really a bad disease. If it's if you get it and you don't treat it right away because you don't know you have it until it goes into your joints or your brain, and then it's really hard to eradicate. So here are some of the symptoms. Rash is the classic, a bullseye rash. Only 9% of people, here's the rash, 9% of people only get this rash. So that means 91% of people do not have a clear signal that they just got, you know, this tick bite and they've got this Lyme. whoops, flu-like symptoms, achy lymph nodes or swollen lymph nodes, if you find between, you know, the spring and the fall that somehow you've got some lymph node you think is a little big or a little sore, think Lyme. Joint pains, headaches, Bell's palsy. I had a patient come to see me with a Bell's palsy, and I immediately told her to get tested for Lyme. She had it. She got treated. Bell's palsy is where a nerve that innervates the facial muscles basically gets inflamed and stops working properly, the facial nerve, and a half side of the face will start drooping all of a sudden, and the eyelid will droop. So Bell's palsy is something that is reversible, but it takes some rehabilitation. But it can be a sign of Lyme. Headaches, severe headaches, neck stiffness, shooting pains in the night, heart palpitations, dizziness, and later on, often swelling of the knees. Joints can, somebody can think that they have gout or something, but they don't actually have gout. And neurological long-term tingling, pains, memory problems, and something called post-Lyme syndrome, like even if somebody has been fully treated, they can continue to have some symptoms. So it's something to be avoided. That prevention's the best medicine in this case, for sure. So speaking of prevention, I want to spend the last 5 minutes here talking about prevention. Why do we prevent? Well, it's kind of a doctor joke, but anyway, the good news is that Congress just mandated that insurance companies have to pay for prevention, and before all the states repeal that and challenge that law, I would recommend that all of you go out and get your colonoscopy, get your preventive testing, and take advantage of this this new law. I mean, a colonoscopy can cost $3,000. $4,000. It's something that, you know, you don't often think of as an out-of-pocket expense. But now, for prevention, it's required at a certain age group. So after 50, I just want to go over some of the things you should do. I want to remind you all to get your B12 level checked, even your, not your folate level so much as your homocysteine level. Homocysteine. Homocysteine. Homocysteine will go up if your folate is not adequate, and that is a risk for stroke and for osteoporosis, among other things. Get your blood pressure checked at least every 2 years, and if you have a tendency for it to be higher, check it more often and do something about it. You know, basically, you can give yourself 2 months of an exercise program to get it down below 140 over 90, and if it's not, then see a doctor. Colonoscopy. How many people have had a colonoscopy? Want to share? Quite a few of you. The good. So again, it's something that often your insurance companies now will cover. Colonoscopy is almost 100% likely to find polyps that can over time go to colon cancer or early colon cancers. Really, early detection with colon cancer is really, really proven. And I have to share with you, unfortunately, that in the time I've been in this community, there have been 5 colon cancers in people in this community that I'm aware of. There may be more. And it's very, you know, very concerning. And most of these were not found. You know, they were found because the person started having symptoms. And often by that time, say there's blood, passing blood, or there's a change in bowel habits, or both. By then, often, it's really advanced, and that's not such a good prognosis. So it's actually, you know, to do that prep for the colonoscopy is not much worse than doing a home prep, you know? It really isn't. In fact, it tastes a lot better than castor oil, I can tell you that much. So, you know, most of you are veterans of purifying. So you purify for a day. And you go in, and usually if you're a person who wants to be asleep during it, like most people, they have some really non-long-lasting sedatives that can put you out for 30 minutes. You can wake up, and pretty much by later in the day, you feel pretty normal, maybe a little tired. I mean, no long-term side effects. So, and if you go to a reputable a person, a GI specialist, or somebody who's been doing them a long time and that has a good reputation, the risk of having a complication from it is very low. I know some people who have heard, you know, maybe they've heard of somebody who had a complication, so they're not going to do it. That's not a good idea. In fact, I had a patient just about 2 months ago, came in with a change of bowel habits and blood, turned out to be a rectal cancer. She got treatment, and I think she's going to be all right. But she had told me a couple years ago that she wasn't going to get screening because somebody in her family had had a colonoscopy, and it had not turned out well, you know, complication. And, you know, it can happen, and it's very unfortunate. You don't want to go for prevention and get something wrong with you because of the procedure. But if she had done that, maybe she wouldn't have had it, you know, as an advanced case. So diabetes, check your blood sugar, particularly if you're overweight or you have any level of high blood pressure at all, even 130 over 80. Mammograms are still a good idea after 50. They do pick up early stages, and there's still significant evidence that it helps reduce mortality, but not before age 50 generally, unless you have special risks. Pap smear, not needed after 65, unless you had a hysterectomy for cancer or some history of cancer or abnormal paps in the past. And the good news for guys is say no to PSA. That's the latest recommendation. This is just a simple blood test, prostate-specific antigen, but the latest review of all the literature says it doesn't help reduce mortality. Better not to do the test, unless there's some particular reason. Okay. All right. So the last thing I wanted to mention was I wanted to share another story with you that's happened in the last couple of weeks in my practice. And it's not the only time this has happened, which is why I'm bringing it up. A gentleman called up and said, actually his wife called up and said, "Will you see my husband? He thinks there's something wrong with his thyroid. He's feeling a little weak, a little fatigued, like something's not right." Actually, this was like in August, and I gave a prescription, and he didn't fill it. So she called again in October and said, "Okay, he still hasn't done it. Want to do it now." So I provided it. Then I got a call about 2 days later, said, "Oh, well, he saw some practitioner, and they said he was fine. And he doesn't need it." And I know he had a lot of confidence in the practitioner. It wasn't a Western medical practitioner. It was another kind of practitioner. And I said, "Well, you know, he should get it anyway." So he did. He got the test anyway. Well, it came back. Lo and behold, he had high thyroid. Not low thyroid, but high thyroid. And, you know, high thyroid can produce side effects. It can give you irregular heartbeats that can be dangerous. It can wear your bone density down. It can make you not sleep well. It can do all sorts of things. So, you know, he could have gone a long time with this high thyroid and maybe gotten some complication from it. So the thing I'm trying to say is that, you know, we have modern medicine, you know, here. We have objectivity. We have a lot of sophisticated ways of measuring. And we do have a human body. It's a physical body. I mean, it's really like there's a reality to the biochemistry and what's going on in there. And we can measure it objectively. And if that's not a good enough reason, well, you know, Maharishi said we should use modern medicine along with Ayurveda and everything else. So when we have that opportunity, I just encourage you, you know, it's fine if somebody tells you, maybe a healer tells you or some great, great kind of personage tells you, you know, you're fine, you're normal, you're, you know, fine. Feel happy about it, but do your screening tests. You know, I'll share with you, I think Triguna told a group of us doctors, you know, when I'm rested, I'm 90% accurate. Now, I don't know anybody else who's come to quite as high a level of pulse assessment or diagnosis as Dr. Triguna. And if he says when he's rested, he's 90%, there's 10% of the time, even when he's at his best, you know, there's something he doesn't see. And that can mean a difference between, you know, really bad health or really much better health for us or any one of us, or even life or death. So, you know, enjoy some kind of subjective assessment somebody may give you, you know. Oh, you're healthy, or you don't have, your colon's fine. I heard that one too. Your colon's fine. You don't need to do that test. Well, the guy had never had a screening test, and he had some kind of not so perfect bowel history. And so now he's thankfully going to get the test, and hopefully it'll be just fine. But don't take that chance with your life. You know, everybody has loved ones. You're loved by somebody. And even more than that, for you, this crowd, especially people who are meditating, you know, people who are closing the eyes, transcending, dissolving stress and tension in the collective consciousness, you're needed. We need you any time on earth. We need you now. And we, you know, we want to stay here. We need to stay here as long as possible to carry out this mission, to be here for the people that love us and that we can give to them. And just don't take chances. You know, put, you know, what is it? Everybody does this. We, you know, it's human nature. We try to procrastinate. We try to diminish. We deny. We do all these things. It's just, it's not our community only. It's everybody. But I just want to encourage you all to take that extra step and put, you know, put kind of the uneasiness or fears or whatever we have that, you know, holds us from really being responsible in a timely way. And just, you know, take care of yourselves and take advantage of everything that's there for you. And stay healthy and live a really, really long life in immortality of your consciousness. And who knows? We live long enough, it might even be the physical immortality we can choose when we move on. So thank you very much for your attention tonight. I'll take a few questions. I'll take a few questions for those who wish to stay, and then we don't want to keep everybody up too much to throw your biorhythms off. We didn't talk about that tonight, but that's important too. And then I'll take some questions down here at the end. So, yes? Actually, does somebody have the microphone, or could you stand and shout it out? Because there's quite a bit of noise. I can't hear what you're asking. Do vegetarians need colonoscopies? Yes, because even though there's a lower risk of colon cancer, there is still a risk. And we have, some people have genes, and some people may have genes that they don't even know about that may be predisposing them. There may be exposures that people have had in their lifetime that may be some toxicity that they got exposed to that could create it. So, yes, vegetarians need if you have a colon, you need a colonoscopy after 50, okay? Yes. Caffeine and coffee? About caffeine and coffee, if you're using coffee to drive yourself when you're tired, then you're probably burning out your adrenals. But if you have you're kind of coffee and you have one cup in the morning or so, it's probably all right. But not if you're prone to anxiety. That's going to make things worse. Any caffeine will make that worse.
Nancy?
Yes?
Hi. Doesn't Amrit paste have a lot of sugar in it? And you said you shouldn't be taking it. Here I am. You shouldn't be taking it early in the morning or first thing in the morning.
You know, Amrit paste is, I think if you have trouble handling sugar or you know you're going in the direction of diabetes or something like that, it's probably better that you take the nectar in tablet form. But if you're, maybe you're vata pitta or something and you can handle it and maybe you take it with some warm milk and then you have to follow it with some breakfast, or you take it even after, like some hot cereal or oatmeal, which has a lot of fiber in it, then you'll absorb the sugars more slowly. So you can kind of use your judgment and see how you feel.
I thought you'd take it without meals.
You can take nectar, 20 minutes before the meal or even after meal. I'm just telling you, if you feel you're concerned about it, you know, my experience is, I'm not going to say it's, you know, one's immune to the sugar in nectar, but it doesn't seem to affect the body the same way that eating a brownie does. You know, is it everyone, most people experience that, unless you're very sensitive to sugar. So, and probably the fat in it, it seems to absorb quite slowly. Yes?
We talked about fats a little bit. Is there any guidelines for ghee?
Guidelines for ghee is, you know, you can get as many guidelines as you have vajjas, probably. And medical doctors. I mean, at this conference, there were medical doctors who were promoting coconut oil, and there are others that were cringing at coconut oil, so cardiologists. So the thing is, ghee is probably, you know, Ayurveda says it's the best fat for the brain. It is high in medium chain fatty acids, triglycerides, just as coconut oil is. So it's good for a certain energy source, as an energy source, and it may have, you know, Ayurveda says it's a healthy fat. So I recommend that people, unless you have a cholesterol problem, you try to include like 1 to 2 teaspoons a day. But I don't recommend that you cook all your food in it. You know, unless you have like really normal cholesterol and your body type is such and you have a lack of ama that you can really process it properly. But not as a rule to cook with it.
Nancy?
Yes.
Wow. Hello. As a diagnostic tool, have you any understanding of how spooning of nails or ridges of nails and how they are created?
Spooning and ridging of nails. Generally, the nails represent asti dhatu, which is the related to the bone tissue. So it would probably have something to do with the absorption of calcium and the utilization of it in the body. So it may be some digestive problem. It may be some of the vajjas say the ridges, especially vertical, have to do with a panavata imbalance. So we're talking about ridges on the nails. Yes? Ah. What do you eat for breakfast if you don't have sugar? Well, look, what I meant was, specifically what I meant with without sugar before noon would be, you know, don't have a cookie, don't have candy, don't have chocolate, you know, that's what I mean. And I would recommend, yeah, don't put sugar in your tea. That's bad for your teeth and your blood sugar all day to be getting sugar like that. But you can have a whole grain for breakfast. I mean, that the ketogenic doctor wouldn't get near it, but yeah, whole grain and maybe some milk with it, some nuts for sure. You can have that, the stewed apple or pear. That's okay because it's with fiber. It's in the whole food form. And then some people, you know, if you're very kapha, it'd be better to have barley soup with greens, you know. Or if you have a sugar intolerance, that's another thing with you can have. Some kind of greens or some kind of quinoa cereal for breakfast.
Nancy?
Yes?
I'm over here with the mic.
Oh, thank you.
Hi. This is sort of related to that question about sugar. I've been noticing that even organic fruits and vegetables are a lot sweeter than I remember them being like 20 years ago. It seems like the breeding is just making for sweeter and sweeter cantaloupe and carrots. Mm. And I was wondering about that in terms of sugar processing and sugar digestion, fruit sugars and vegetable sugars, and then also other sweeteners like honey or maple syrup.
Well, my general recommendation is whole food. If you take the whole food, I don't know what to say. I don't think we should give up carrots because they're sweeter, but maybe, you know, I think we should all go more towards more greens. The greens have all this wonderful calcium, and they also have omega-3 fatty acids in them, and they purify, help the liver purify. So more of the greens and the cruciferous. And, you know, you take as much of the sweet vegetables and fruits as is appropriate for your body type, I mean, and your state of balance or imbalance. Yes?
I'm just wondering about this...
where you're saying to skip the PSA test for men?
Yes.
Where that comes from, and I just know some people who have actually, through that, found some serious conditions.
Yeah. Well, the U.S. Preventive Task Force is the agency or the group that reviews all of the literature and all the different studies and the big review studies, which look at numbers of, you know, big trials and the results. And they recently, this year, you know, on the basis of all these reviewing all these studies, said, look, we in general, we don't find that this has really made a difference. You know, we may find cancers of the prostate, but finding them and treating them is not leading to a prolongation of life. It's in general. There was a study in Europe that found that there was a significant increase in lifespan because of the screening, but they screen differently. They don't screen asymptomatic people in large population like we do in U.S. We take all sorts of healthy people and just have them do the test, whereas in the European study, which found a benefit, they were only testing people who had some kind of question about it. So they were more likely to have perhaps a more advanced stage of disease. You know, bottom line, it's a issue that you should discuss with your doctor and find out what's right for you. But you have to realize that if you do the test and you find an elevated level, one, you may get a biopsy for no reason because you may not have any cancer there. And you have a lot of anxiety and all that about it. Or if they do find a cancer, it may be that if it had just been left there, you would have been fine throughout your whole life and never had to deal with it. Because they tend to be generally very slowly growing, especially later in life. In fact, by age like 85, about 80% of men have some cancer in their prostate. But it doesn't do them any harm. It develops later in life, and it never threatens their life or even their functionality. So that's the thing. It's a difficult. It's been a difficult decision, and still now. But there's just too much risk of having intervention that's not needed, and having morbidity or side effects and complications that could have been avoided otherwise. Anybody else?
Yeah. Hi, Nancy. I'm very curious about the protein issue. Mm-hmm. I eat an Annapurna every day, and you know, for dinner, I think I had some veggies and some rice and, you know, one ladle of dal. Maybe I had some lassi at lunch today.
Mm.
And I'm very curious, you know, how does someone who eat an Annapurna, how do you get enough protein? How much protein do I really need?
Well, I know I'm going to create a run on cottage cheese, but I'll tell you, that's probably the only thing that you can consistently get there that's high in protein. Cottage cheese is a very good concentrated source of protein. And that I would suggest at lunchtime. You know, curds at night will definitely create some congestion and blocking of the srotas. So I wouldn't recommend that you eat these curds at night. But at lunchtime, if you have some fair agni, you can have something like have the cottage cheese. And, you know, you can kind of test if you're getting enough protein. Like if you go to the gym or, you run a couple miles and you go to the gym and you pump iron and you still feel energetic, and then you're probably okay with protein. But if you kind of lag in the day or the late afternoon, you know, you get tired and you don't really have a lot of stamina, maybe protein as well as B vitamins. That was another thing, not just B12, but in general B vitamins. A B complex can sometimes be really helpful for vegetarians. But I always recommend, except for B12, I recommend that people go to whole food vitamins, you know, like brands that are completely whole food derived, so they're more natural to the body. But if you're correcting a deficiency, you've got to take higher dose, for example, of B12. I'll take two more questions. If you drink water, should you take salt with it? You're taking salt with your water because if you're eating food generally, there's naturally salt in it, and as well as if you ever eat out or you eat any packaged or prepared things, you're getting lots and lots of salt. So you don't need to take extra salt. You know, if you're running a marathon maybe, but not otherwise. And one last question over in the corner. So the question is, doesn't dal and rice make a complete protein together? Well, beans and rice classically do complement each other pretty well. But the thing is, you know, you have to look at the whole amount of protein. First of all, basmati rice doesn't have much protein in it. And then you you look at mung dal is the highest, one of the highest sources of protein in a legume. But if you have a soupy dal, you know, maybe you're getting a tablespoon of these little, you know, beans, right? And if it's a really thick dal, you'll get more. But how many people are getting thick dal and taking maybe a cup of it and eating it all? So, you know, it can happen, but I just share with you that in general, it's not enough protein for almost everybody that I see to just eat that way. You need to have something more than that, more concentrated. If you want to stay off milk products. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mung dal. Well, you know, if you make mung dal and you make it really thick and you use quite a lot of it, or maybe some other beans as well, and maybe quinoa instead of rice. You know, quinoa is higher in protein than rice, than even basmati rice. Amaranth. These higher protein grains and nuts and that's maybe you'll get enough, and you can always consider a protein supplement of some type. Or some people have turned, you know, not totally vegetarian out of need, or they feel better that way. So, you know, I think you have to go for the ideal, but also listen to your body, and you know. Try to meet the needs of your body, because anything less than that can diminish your health. Okay, thank you very much.